present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
We start a new series with a cutting from the March edition of Reader's Digest, read for us by Corrie Caulfield.
Stiletto's lap dancing club in Wigan has sewn electronic alarms into its bras to stop customers stealing them. Manager Pauline Westwood says at least 200 bras have gone so far and it's leaving us very exposed.
Thanks to Keith Atherton of Wigan for sending that in. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and newcomer Sue Perkins. Challenging them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, who's insisting that reports of his political death have been greatly exaggerated?
No idea. I'm afraid I don't read the papers anymore. I just do this Sudoku lock. No, I do know it. It's Tony Blair. It's a bit odd, all this, because he just won his third consecutive election, which is a Labour record. And immediately, Labour MPs have gone into total panic. They think the world's about to end. And he's got to go. And he was in a bit of a panic. You see him outside number 10, he was lip trembling, always a bad sign with Blair, and saying, well, the people have spoken, and I'm listening. And he's going to carry on listening. He's going to listen to all of us for the next few years. That's why he's got big ears. He's built for it. He can do it. And he listened jolly hard, and the first message he got from the voice of the people was that they wanted Blunkett back in the cabinet running child support. And he then listened a bit harder and heard this huge popular clamour for him to give a peerage to Andrew Adonis, so he did that. And it's been non-stop excitement ever since. This exciting new listening government, there's all its new faces, Jeff Hoon and John Prescott. Anyway, and that's it, and there's it's business as usual, as far as I can tell. But there is a new minister in the MOD who the Daily Mail claims is called Lord Smallpox. And I don't think this can be right, can it? Maybe.
Do you think Smallpox and Adonis will ever get together for some A wonderful photo opportunity is called up, though, isn't it?
Well, especially now that Ed Balls is an MP as well. I'm looking forward to that immensely. Every time he gets a ministerial job at a new department, there are all these headlines saying, make Balls to education, Balls to Smallpox. Balls dropped at last. Sorry.
Following his controversial cabinet reshuffle, Tony Blair informed the Labour Party that though he will be handing over the leadership before the next election, he won't do so immediately. Some MPs claim that while he spoke of handing over the leadership, Tony Blair actually gestured towards Mr. Brown, but they couldn't see how many fingers he was using. Among the loyal supporters that Blair rewarded were the policy advisor Andrew Adonis, or described as more Andrew than Adonis, who got a ministerial role, Labour donor Paul Drayson, Lord Smallpox, who got a seat in the Lords, and John Prescott, who got a family-sized pack of Monster Munch. 2 points to Francis. Sue, you're very welcome to the news quiz.
Thank you.
Who was putting on a brave face this week?
Now, I think the clue's in the question there. Let me think about it. This was to do with George Bush's trip to Georgia, which has ruffled some feathers. Not with Putin, obviously, because he's not a bird. He's not an aquatic animal. I think that George Bush didn't really mean to create this sort of whirlwind. I'd be surprised if he knew where he was at any given moment, or indeed that he'd actually left American soil. With all the tabloid headlines, this will be seen as a snub. This will be seen as him allying himself with newly created states. But he doesn't, I don't think, intend to do any of this because he hasn't got the wit about him. That's succinct, and my feeling on the subject.
His speech praising the desegregation of the buses was very good, though.
All the questions this week turn on to John Prescott. Was he involved in this at all?
Yes, he was. They wouldn't let him stand at the front in the Russian VE Day celebrations. And he was in the fourth row at the back, and it looked like those school photographs where there's some kid pulling a face to muck up the entire show. And he sat there scowling. It was wonderful.
After calls by George W. for more democracy in Eastern Europe, Mr. Putin warned the president, democracy is not something you can export. Makes it a bit like Rover cars, then. Mr. Bush performed well during the memorial ceremony in Moscow, right up to the point where he asked President Putin who was buried in the tomb of the unknown soldier. So, 2 points to Sue. Jeremy, who shuffled into the shadows this week?
After the resounding quadrennial drubbing the Tories have just enjoyed, they're all very cheerful for some reason. They don't get it, the fact that they've had their go and they're not coming back. People remember them. But they're all very happy with themselves. And Howard's been bringing in all kinds of exciting people into the cabinet, old and new, a mixture of ignorance and exhaustion. And he's been, I think he's been watching the X-Men films and thinks if he can just get the right combination of mutants together, it'll be a winning team.
Also, the most exciting news of all is Fatty Soames decided to go to the back benches so he could do more blue sky thinking and modernising type stuff instead of spending more time with his wine waiter, which I think is more likely. His mighty intellect is going to sit there brooding for 6 months and then he might stand himself, you never know, he's got time.
He can't stand himself, he needs three people to help him.
I had lunch with Nicholas Soames during the election, and I have to report that he drank Diet Coke throughout and didn't have a dessert.
How many first courses did he have?
No, just one. It's Michael Howard's shadow cabinet reshuffle, which has seen him giving places to all the main contenders to succeed him as leader. The big surprise of the reshuffle was the appointment of young George Osborne as shadow chancellor. Mr. Osborne has many hurdles to overcome in his new role, not least of which is how to fit in opposing Gordon Brown between rugger practice and Latin prep. 2 points to Jeremy. Alan, listen to this. Alan, who's been given just a little less time?
A little less time? I can't do
it. To get through their work.
It's not the 48-hour week.
Yes, it is.
Oh, it's the donkeys at Blackpool. The Blackpool Corporation, under its EU remit, has said the donkeys are working far too hard, and the donkeys now have to get an hour's off for lunch, and then an hour and a half to evacuate what they've had for lunch, and they get every Friday off. This is in line with EU legislation, supported by those dreadful MEPs who voted against Britain having an opt-out so we can all work enormously hard and don't have to do just 48 hours. The odd thing is our productivity is very, very low for that 48 hours. I saw Finland has a 33-hour week. What else do you do in Finland when you finish work?
MEPs voted to end Britain's long-standing opt-out from the European Union's Working Time Directive. Labour MEPs defied Tony Blair to vote against Britain's opt-out. Bad news is Mr. Blair's had the MEPs sent to the salt mines. The good news is that they only need to mine salt for 48 hours a week. At the end of round one, the scores are everybody 4 points. And we start round two with a wanted ad found on the George Eliot Hospital website.
If anyone has any Lego that is unwanted, please consider donating it to help build a school in Gambia.
Thanks to Pat Ryan and Anita for spotting that. Francis, why won't complicated crimes be such a trial anymore?
Oh, is this about abolishing juries and fraud trials? And
yes.
Things? Yeah, well, that's about it, I think. The juries just can't get their pretty little heads around these things where you have some chap in the dock and the prosecution says, he's a crook. We've got a few documents here saying, I am a crook. They go on for about 2 years, these things, because the lawyers keep haggling, and it'd be much easier if a judge decides this. Is that about right?
I don't know. Isn't the idea that they want to shorten the length of trials so that more judges actually make it to the end of the trial? There's a popular misconception that judges can be seen sleeping during lengthy trials. In fact, they are dead. I did jury service. It's great. I got this bloke off. I actually was brilliant. I played the Henry Fonda role perfectly. Unfortunately, I did the Henry Fonda role from On Golden Pond, which... It was okay, but it just, you know.
Well, Sue here did Big Brother service, which is much the same as jury service, I think, isn't it?
Except nobody wins. No one's let off, and there's no parole. Just a lifetime thinking, why? I'll move on from that, otherwise I have to be back in the rubber room. Not a good experience, really. Not nice. Not nice people.
Who are you in
about
with,
it now. There's Dennis. Don't make me talk about him. Imagine a man in your face for 10 days saying that Jim Davidson was the most underrated man. Not even the most underrated man pretty much in British history. Well, I'll move on to Anne Diamond if you don't stop me now.
experience. It's like regimental reunions. You'll be going on like this for the rest of your life. Every few years, you and Les will get together and chew the fat, I expect.
He said raiding Iraq was a great idea, Sue, because we got women out of those dresses.
Pity you're not on next week, actually, because Les Dennis is coming.
I'm interested in this rubber room of yours.
Lord Falkland has announced plans to reduce the length and cost of criminal trials to free up more legal aid funds for civil cases. In some cases, Lord Falkland wants defence and prosecution lawyers to agree beforehand that the defendant has committed a crime even before the trial occurs, a time-saving device known as the Guantanamo way. Falkland has said that the days of the 18-month trial are over. People are not capable of remembering evidence of guilt over such a long period of time, a point recently proved by Tony Blair's re-election. So who wants to iron out any obstacles to become officer material?
Ah, well, this will be our own favourite, Prince Harry, who, despite his overachievement at school, is ironing shirts quite happily at Sandhurst. I believe he started his officer training amidst further furore that he may have cheated in one of his exams. What I particularly like is the fact his teacher taped him admitting to this, or pretty much so, which must have been very obvious, just the positioning of the flower with the microphone in the way. I'd just like to speak a bit louder. So brilliant to know that the future of the army rests with people like that.
It's very unsettling he wasn't carrying his own ironing board, though. I didn't know all this about the army, for which we pay. But he didn't carry, everywhere else was carrying their own ironing board and he didn't have his, and I think it's because it's such a hard thing to set up. I mean, I've tried. and you can lose an arm. But
the even more amazing revelation is that to get into Sandhurst these days you need an art A-level.
His mistakes were pretty bad in that A-level coursework, though.
Well, that was the main defence. The headmaster of Eton said the teacher couldn't have cheated on his behalf because these essays were literate.
Clearly the work of a boy whose parents were cousins.
Prince Harry enrolled at Sandhurst Military Academy this week to train as an army officer, accompanied by his very own ironing board. And at least if his career as an army officer doesn't work out, he has got something to fall back on. Us. Jeremy, listen to this.
Okay, can we get on with the programme now? Do you know they don't have glens in Nottinghamshire? They do in Scotland, they do in County Antrim, but not in Nottinghamshire. That's the only thing wrong with that song.
Jeremy, what band of men have banned Robin Hoodies?
Ah, this is the Blue Water development. Blue Water, which is a beautiful palace in the Thames estuary, has banned the wearing of hooded jackets, popularly known by the young people as hoodies, because it makes people commit crime. When your ears get too hot, you start nicking pension books off old ladies and spitting. So they think that by making the young gentlemen, I'm not sure if they're allowed to wear hoodies with the hoods down, or they're simply not allowed to wear the hoodies at all. But hoodies and baseball caps are to be banned in an effort to thwart crime. Only those two things. Balaclavas, full-face ski masks, stockings,
I think the reason for it was that the CCTV cameras can't identify these people.
I'd have thought, though, that the police, rather than setting up cameras and forgetting to put tapes in them, they could actually go out into the world and say, "Oi, young men, you behave yourself or you should be straight down to Turkey."
That'd ward them off.
It certainly would. My day, they gave you a friendly clip round the ear with a police horse's hoof and riot shield, and you were glad of it. Never did me any harm. But I didn't get Art A level.
The country's biggest shopping centre, Bluewater, in Kent, has banned youths from wearing hoodies and baseball caps. Customers at Bluewater have complained about antisocial behaviour and swearing by people wearing hooded tops, which is what happens when you let the local monastery in to sell their super-strength Trappist lager in the food court. John Prescott banked the campaign to ban hoodies after he was surrounded by angry youths at a motorway cafe who were incensed because he had eaten all the pies. Alan, why might we all be worried about losing our cool?
There was this remarkable documentary about what would happen if Britain got warm, and of course, what happens is everybody panicked and the country fell apart. And as a result of this, the government has produced a pamphlet. And the pamphlet says, if it gets very hot this summer, put your feet in water and don't go out, because you might get sunburn and you might get hot. The pamphlet has cost £6 million, I think. And we shove through every door, and we shall read this and learn that if it gets hot, we have to stay inside. And that's about top and bottom of it. They think it is thought that a heat wave is coming. It could go up as high as 67 or 68. some afternoon in July, as a result of which lots of old people will keel over and be taken to A&E's where there aren't any trolleys. 20 years ago, we had a nuclear war pamphlet that was sent by William Whitelaw. It was all about gumming brown paper over your face in the event of a bomb going off. But if you were ill, you had to go to a hospital. 30 million people turned up at the Royal Free. What we don't want is a nuclear war. When the weather's warm, they wouldn't be able to cope at all.
So their advice was supposed to put gummed brown paper on your face in the event of a nuclear strike.
And sellotape around your windows.
That'd do it, wouldn't it?
All the radioactivity adheres to the sellotape. It's like flies. And then you pull it off and throw it in the bin, being very careful.
Then you just have to deal with the matter of the impact of the actual bomb itself.
No, the trick with that, send a pamphlet, you have to be 180 miles away from the epicentre. So as soon as you see the flash, you pedal like buggery.
But they can produce as many leaflets as they like. They're not going to get the over 70s to take their coats off in July.
The Met Office is predicting higher than average temperatures this summer. People should keep in the shade and cover their heads, but not with a baseball cap or hoodie. Old people, babies and the sick are most at risk, especially if they're in an NHS hospital. But at the end of round two, everybody has 8 points. Round three, here's an advertisement from Mid-Cheshire's Buy Sell magazine.
Very talented eventer all-rounder, 16 hands high, liver chestnut gelding, rising seven. Needs confident, ambitious, experienced rider. Will go far in right hands, schooling well, bold, confident jump, excels cross-country. No novices, please. Broken leg forces sale.
Thanks to Sue Roberts in Cheshire.
That was the weirdest shipping forecast I've ever...
Francis, listen to this.
La mer, qu'on voit danser le long du golfe clair, a des reflets d'argent. La mer, des reflets changeants sous la pluie.
La mer by Ruth Kelly. Francis, who has crossed La Manche to take l'action industrielle by la mer?
Hundreds of French surgeons, militant French surgeons, who have ended up at Pontins in Sussex, I think, because it turns out they wanted to go on strike, but in France the law is that if you're a doctor or a surgeon and you go on strike, the police can force you to work. They drag you from your house and drag you into the operating theatre at gunpoint and make you get on with it. So they fled the country through Eurotunnel and then ended up in Camber Sands. So they're spending the summer twiddling their toes on the beach. They didn't seem to be having a lot of meetings from the photographs I saw in the papers.
Their head guy of one of them is a cardiovascular surgeon. I was also at pains to point out, we're not having a holiday. I know I've been. I didn't have a holiday.
Still not clear to me why they had to go to Pontins and Camber Sands. I mean, the whole world was their oyster. They could have gone anywhere except France.
And well, it's handy with the channel. I mean, you're through the channel and it's only another 14 or 15 hours to get to Camber Sands.
I was very surprised the French had surgeons. I mean, I spent a great deal of time in France and a lot of things have gone wrong with me. And it always called for a suppository. It's very, very strange they are suppository fixated. I didn't know they actually sawed people up and stitched them. I thought you went in for an appendicitis.
They saw you coming.
Ah, c'est Alain Corin.
Bring me the large suppository.
Hundreds of striking French surgeons are spending 4 days at a holiday camp in Camber Sands in protest over low pay and poor conditions at home. News that 300 French strikers were arriving in England caused a flurry of interest in the media and a misguided attempt by Arsene Wenger to sign several of them for Arsenal. Soon, which archaeologists are glad to have got the boot.
Yes, this is a story about a shoe. I think it was an Iron Age shoe found in a tree in Somerset, which isn't possibly sensibly a great story, but why was the shoe there? Was this part of a sort of strange West Country Iron Age can-can competition?
It answers the question, what did people put shoes on top of before there were bus stops?
A leather shoe thought to be 2,000 years old has been discovered in an ancient tree trunk on land near, and this is quite true, the town of Wellington. The tanned leather emerged from its home in the mud last week, only to be buried straight back there when its Veritas party failed to win a single seat. Jeremy, whose cosmetic claims turned out to be a load of Botox.
Oh, Estee Lauder, youngest sister of Harry. They say that they've got this magic cream, and if you flick a bit on somebody you don't like, they will disappear. All these adverts are full of these things. You know, they say, our new product contains wobbly buttergen made up a sin, which visibly reduces the appearance. What do you mean visibly? Either it gets rid of it or it doesn't. You know, and all these things that say, by brushing your teeth with our pro-vitamin floor cleaner, you can reduce flatulence by 17.1%. Tests show. But what's that one that that woman comes in and says, well, you're right, Mum. She says, I'm just feeling a bit bloated. Just go and have a... Yeah.
I never know how... I don't have the framework for making decisions when I go into Boots to buy things, because there are so many things that say for very sensitive... I don't know whether my skin is sensitive. I actually bought something about a week ago. After I got it home, it was only a shower. I didn't want a bloody shower, but it said for flyaway hair. The last thing I need... I don't know the messages they're giving me on these shelves.
Yes, the multi-£1 billion cosmetics industry suffered a blow this week after the Advertising Standards Authority found claims from Estee Lauder about its anti-cellulite cream and Pantene about its Pro-V shampoo defied medical science. Cosmetic companies make weird claims. Oil of Olay says it can combat the 7 signs of aging, but fails to include wearing cardigans, having an excessive number of cats, and smelling of wee-wee. Alan, we've finally made it. Alan, what fish finds making a big splash with the ladies a bit of a drag?
Well, one's uncomfortable even retailing it because it is so shot through with metaphor and other possibilities. There is a fish called the mosquito fish, which has the largest penis in the world, relative to its body size. And females, I was going to say not surprisingly, but I daren't, females are attracted to this because that's the way genetics and evolution works. And also, if you're lucky, on the set. Anyway, the females are attracted to this fish with a very large dong, and it then services the females, which enrages the males who are watching, because crowds turn up to watch this thing do it. They all turn up at Spearmint Mosquito on a Friday night. And they say, I fancy the one in the corner, but the one in the corner is actually looking. The door has opened, and through it has come this mosquito fish with a thing under its arm and wrapped around its leg. And they say, wow, first foxtrot for me. And the other male fish get in very angry. They fall on this fish, and it tries to swim away, but its penis is so large that it can only swim slowly. It acts like this enormous drag anchor. And they then eat it. They just eat the... They end up eating the entire fish. But, it's all very like Chigwell.
Searchers of the tropical mosquito fish found that male mosquito fish with the biggest genitals attracted the most mates. The males with the large genitals are easily outswum by their rivals, though they do look terrific in Speedos. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from the Sunday Times, a story from the election campaign about the Tory candidate Ian Dale.
Knocking on doors in the North Norfolk seat, he met an elderly lady who wondered if he might help her. Dale, fighting a Lib Dem majority, was naturally happy to oblige. "Thank you," said the lady voter. "You'll find the Jerex on the sideboard." Luckily, the sideboard contained only Duracell. She wanted her clock battery changed.
Sue.
This is from the Farnham Herald. Joy as otters return to Valley after 45 years. Blackwater Valley Countryside Partnership is celebrating the news that after years of waiting, there's evidence of otters finally in the Blackwater Valley. It was more than 45 years ago that otters were last recorded on the River Blackwater, and this positive sighting indicates that otters are exploring the river with a view to taking up permanent residence. Unfortunately, the good news is tempered by the fact that the otter in question was found dead on a railway line near Frimley.
Jeremy.
Now, this is sent in by Phil Collier of Shrewsbury, or Shrewsbury, as we used to say. Meanwhile, around 50 people flocked to St. Anne's Church last Sunday to lay flowers for Mother's Day. Churchgoer Jean Jones said it had been a fantastic event and lots of people had laid flowers in memory of their mothers. She added they planned to hold their annual crucifixion event on Good Friday at 4 p.m.
Mine, Simon, is from the Bucks Free Press and touches on a scandal we all know about. Said one of the many hotel guests who complained that they'd been kept awake all night by Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie was Amersham pharmacist Mr. William Jameson, 68. He told reporters, "My wife and I have been happily married for 44 years, but I cannot recall a single occasion upon which either of us felt it necessary to shriek."
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. And everybody has a perfect score of 16 points. And before we leave you, here's a letter to the Daily Mail, spotted by Sue James of Bridgend.
"Months ago, my mother was referred by her doctor to a consultant for a hearing aid to be fitted. Since then, she has heard nothing. So much for the NHS."
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news calls were Francis Rean, Sue Perkins, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by George Pohl, Simon Littlefield and Lucy Clark. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.